The New England Patriots kicked off their regular season yesterday in Miami. Sigh. Where they always seem to struggle, and yesterday was no different.
The Dolphins are going to run a play here.
Yeah, I think if... I don't know if I really love this decision.
Over the middle, got his man, and look at him go! Jalen Waddle for the touchdown!
Ugh, that score made it 17-0 at the half, and the rest, well, you know how it goes. So here to break it down for us, our expert panel from last Friday's show, where we said we'd bring you the results, and now maybe I'm a little sorry we are. Jonathan Marshall is a sports reporter for WMUR in Manchester. Jonathan, welcome back.
How's it going, guys?
Well, better days. And Chris Sitterick from WBUR here in Studio 2. Chris, hey there.
Yeah, I agree with the play-by-play. I wish they hadn't made the decision to run that before the half. Brutal.
Yeah. So, John, let's start with you. What did you see yesterday in the New England Patriots?
Pretty much a carryover from the preseason and what we talked about. I mean, the glaring issue from what I've noticed for the past couple years with this team, obviously post Tom Brady, of course, but a lack of dynamic playmaking ability. So, right, everything's not going to be perfect, right? And so what can you point to say, okay, despite the foundation not being solid, despite everything not being perfect, where can we go to at least rise above the lack of a foundation, the lack of a solid foundation? Is it the quarterback? Is it playmaking at the wideout position, the running back position? None of that is there. And so when you have these issues with the offensive play calling, when you have these issues with the O-line, it gets even more compounded, and there's no dynamic talent out there to rise above that. And that's what we're seeing, especially yesterday.
So a couple of things I want to pick up on there, and I'll turn to you, Chris Sitterick. So for example, John just talked about the O-line. We had twice in the first half of the game where the quarterback, Mac Jones, the guy that throws the ball, right, just gets destroyed by somebody whose job is to try to tackle him, and there's no one covering him. That's called the blitz.
Yeah.
And as John's saying, there's nobody who can sort of, out of the pure force of their dynamism and athleticism, overcome those bad moments.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a brilliant observation, but we don't have Tom Brady to cover the faults anymore, right? You don't have one of the greatest to ever play who can kind of rise up when the situation's not perfect and find a way to make it happen. And we talked on Friday about they're changing their offensive scheme, and so these linemen don't necessarily know who they're supposed to block, where they're supposed to go. And that is so scary when you've got a second-year quarterback you're really hoping will take that leap and become kind of a leader on this team. You got to protect him, right? He went out with an injury, and I'll maybe get to that later. But, yeah, I think we saw exactly what we were afraid we were going to see.
So, John, I am fascinated by always about the way that when we watch a sport like football play out, the choices that you make, the team that you have, I think everybody can understand this from their own lives, right? We're trying to get something done. Maybe we don't have all the players we want. Now we've got a boss who's making decisions I just don't understand and I'm not confident. Did we see any increase in confidence of people for Bill Belichick, who was really puzzling people before this first game about what is he doing and why is he doing it?
I think the questions even had compounded even more.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, how can you watch that display? There's no excuses at this point. You have a full preseason, a full training camp, and all the messages from the media press conference in the preseason is questioning just where are the play calls coming from? Who's making these decisions? And Belichick says the responsibility is on him. You know, so you have to look at Belichick when it comes to just the roster construction, just the decision to hire Matt Patricia, who is a defensive guy, to take control of the offensive situation, and Joe Judge included. And so Chris just said, when it comes to Mac Jones being a young quarterback, that concerns me the most in year two in his development. Yes. Does he have a ceiling? He's not Tom Brady. He's not, you know, he's not physically talented compared to some of the other quarterbacks that you may see around this league, but you have to foster an environment to where he can reach his potential. I don't think Bill Belichick is doing that at all.
Yeah, John, I would add to that too. I think we had all these kind of big picture questions and critiques of Belichick's approach in the offseason and the preseason, but then we got some granular stuff yesterday. Like I know I'm not the only one that was kind of baffled. Kendrick Bourne, one of the team's best receivers, basically didn't play until you got more than halfway into the fourth quarter. He comes comes in, he's in for one play, and he catches a 41-yard bomb. And then they pull him out right away. So it's you got to wonder, like, why wasn't he on the field? Why didn't they try using him? And like I said, I wasn't the only one asking this. Belichick had this exchange with reporters after the game. Tiziana, you know I love bringing you some electric Bill Belichick sound.
Some rowdy Bill Belichick
so
here.
So let's take a listen to whether or not it was an intentional decision not to play Kendrick Bourne.
No, it just worked out that way.
Came in and immediately caught a 40-yard pass. In retrospect, you wish you played a more thing.
We did what we thought was best.
Was it disciplinary or anything?
So insightful, right?
Right. And John, I want to turn to you about that because, again, sticking with this analogy of, you know, you work on a team or in an organization, you want to know what your boss is doing. Bill Belichick used to get a pass on not answering these questions. Is he going to be able to still to keep up with the tight-lipped mumble-mumble no answers? Or is there an accountability moment coming for him?
When you're not winning, the things that were excused before won't be excused. And that exchange right there is showing you right there. And you got to think, right, if you're in that locker room or any organization, any place on the job where your manager or boss, whatever, is making questionable decisions, how is that going to trickle down for the entire team, right? Are you going to block as hard? Are you going to perform as hard? Like, there's going to be a lot of confusion. Like, what is this person doing? What are they thinking? So you got to think about the locker room and what is that reflecting on you? Like, he says that the guy who probably is your most explosive option, most explosive weapon offensively when it comes to being a wideout, makes a play, and we felt the best decision for this team was to not play him until that moment. It's not looking good. It's not looking good. And as a locker room, as an organization, you got to wonder mentally where this team is at right now and questioning possibly what Bill Belichick is even thinking. And is he putting this team truly in the right position to succeed?
We're talking with Jonathan Marshall of WMUR and Chris Siderick of WBUR. John, you made me worry about Mac Jones in a way that I had not been thinking about before. Maybe a little bit of the mother in me about this young person who's supposed to be developing. And so, Chris, I'll turn to you here because you also made reference to the fact that he went and got an X-ray after the game.
Yeah, test results were negative. He traveled back with the team. They were going to do some further testing today, and Bill Belichick was actually asked about that at a virtual press conference today. Here was his wonderful update.
No update on Mac. We'll see how he is today. But, you know, he came back with us, so you know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And, yeah, that's about the news from yesterday.
I mean, imagine having to take that seriously as a reporter. It's brutal. But I think even if he is okay, it just shows the concerns that we were talking about on Friday. You cannot afford to lose this guy that you're trying to build your franchise around, and they are not doing what it takes to protect him.
So, John, this is both depressing and compelling, right? For those who are kind of intrigued by what we're watching unfold, if they want to watch this next game, what's one thing you advise people to watch for other than whether or not Mac Jones is in the game?
Can they protect Mac? I mean, if Mac Jones is in the game, can they protect him? But also, offensively, there has to be some semblance of an identity, right? Like, without an identity, you know, do you know where you're going? There's nothing but confusion, right? And so I want to see if there's some sort of identity that this team can put together offensively. I mean, to put up a 0 points through two quarters is inexcusable. So offensively, we have to figure out what this team is. Are they a run team? Can they get some things going in the pass game? They have to figure out their identity and go from there. That's the first step, figuring out what this team's identity is for 2022.
And Chris Siderick, can they do that against a team like the Steelers?
I mean, they should be able to. The Steelers are not supposed to be good this year. They did end up squeaking out a win yesterday in overtime. So I don't know. I can't take anything for granted with this team anymore. For 20 years, we could assume the Patriots were probably going to win on Sundays. Those days are long gone.
All right, WBUR's Chris Siderick and Jonathan Marshall, who's sports reporter for WMUR. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to stick with the sports theme now, but we're going to turn to running because if you're hoping to run this year's Boston Marathon, it's time to pull the trigger. Registration starts today and continues through the week. Here with us now in Studio 2, welcoming back Alex Ashlock. He's covered the marathon for WBUR since 1998 and has become, I feel like, kind of my personal guide to the marathon as well.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Welcome back, Alex.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for not asking me about the Patriots or the Red Sox.
Oh, we're not talking about the Red Sox. today. All right, so registration does start today for the 2023 Boston Marathon. Tell people what they need to know.
You know, it's open until 5 p.m. on Friday. There used to be, or there has been in recent years, a lot of angst for folks that wanted to try to get into the next year's marathon. For many years, you had to have a faster time than your qualifying time to get into the race. That didn't happen this year. Everybody who had a qualifying time and who tried to sign up got into the race. So we'll see if that happens again for the 2023 race. So people are, runners are poised at their computers, signing up, and hopefully they'll all get in.
All right. So, and when you, I'm intrigued by this. So what you mean is it used to be so hard to get in that your qualifying time wasn't good enough.
You had to
be able to run better than
that. Exactly. Your qualifying time, I think in the 2021 race, your qualifying time had to be something like 5 or 6 minutes faster just to get into the marathon. That didn't happen for this year's race for probably a variety of reasons. And one of them was probably there just that weren't that many other qualifying races to run because of the pandemic. There weren't any big marathons. So we'll see if that happens again for 2023.
And I do want to note, of course, last year at this time, runners were finishing off their training plans, getting ready for a fall Boston Marathon. Next year, back to Patriots Day,
spring,
April 17th. Yep. So for those counting, what are the biggest differences between running in the spring when we usually do and running in the fall?
Well, if you're training for a fall marathon, especially around here this summer, you've run in the brutal heat getting ready for that fall marathon. If you're doing a spring marathon, usually you start training around Christmas time, December, and here in Boston, you're running in the wintertime, obviously. It can be freezing cold, there can be snow, and then you don't know what it's going to be like in April in Boston, as
you know.
Because
it might be like 85 degrees.
It might be 90 degrees.
50.
There might be a monsoon like there was in 2018. So basically, you just have to put in the miles, regardless of when your marathon is, and then you see what race day's like.
And then you just wait and see. And, of course, we can have zero predictions on that because I don't even know what tomorrow's weather's really going to be like. All right. I do want to turn to this other piece, Alex. I find this fascinating. So this other really big marathon-related news. John Hancock announced that the race in April 2023, will be their last race as the lead corporate sponsor in partnership with the Boston Athletics Association, the BAA, which runs it.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a really big deal, Alex.
I think it is a big deal, but you're talking about a partnership that lasted for nearly 40 years. Nothing lasts forever. Things are changing all the time. John Hancock was purchased by a Toronto-based company, I think, in 2004. Maybe they're looking to a more global vision, perhaps. There might have been a sign that this was coming. I think it was last year. John Hancock was in charge of assembling the elite field for the race every year. They had a person that whose job it was to liaison with the athletes and make the arrangements for them to be part of the field. John Hancock gave that up and turned it over to the Boston Athletic Association last year. So it's the BAA now that makes up, you know, gets the athletes to come here and run. So maybe that was a sign that John Hancock was going to step back.
Well, I also wonder, you know, them letting go of their iconic billboard picture of, you know, John Hancock at the at Fenway Park, which they also announced they're not going to continue to pay for. That does feel like a pretty big change.
Yeah, I think that's another big change. And again, it's just a sign, I think, that John Hancock is changing.
So that is part of a 40-year transformation, Alex. So talk about that. How has the marathon changed over those nearly 40 years?
Well, I wasn't here in the 80s, but believe it or not, the marathon started to not be such a big deal.
Hmm.
And one of the reasons was they didn't offer any prize money. So there was an executive from John Hancock, David Alessandro, Boston Mayor Ray Flynn got involved, and they worked up a sponsorship deal that paid millions of dollars to get it started. Marathon historian Tom Dedarian told The Globe last week that a key point in this was that they didn't call it the John Hancock Boston Marathon. It was just the Boston Marathon. You see these other big marathons, they have sponsors' names on them. That never happened with the Boston Marathon. So it started in 1986. I think the first prize money was something like $30,000 for the winner of the race. And it's grown into this massive marathon that's known worldwide. And the winners receive $150,000 each for winning.
Well, and I want to note, I went back and looked. And in the early 80s, at the beginning of this partnership, you'd see 7,000, 8,000 runners registered. Now we're talking about nearly 30,000.
Yep.
And this last year, more than $35 million raised for charity, which, as I understand it, also a significant change over the last few decades.
Yeah, John Hancock, people from John Hancock, workers from John Hancock are part of those charities. And, you know, they've raised hundreds of millions of dollars over the charity program over the years. So John Hancock's been a huge part of the Boston Marathon for nearly 40 years.
So could this affect the runners?
You know, it won't affect the everyday runners, the folks who, you know, are out there running 3-4 hour marathons. It could affect the elite runners just in terms of whether, you know, the sponsorship is going to be the same and will the prize money be the same and will it be as attractive to come here and run to compete for $150,000 if you're the winner. You know, not in each field in the marathon, you know, there's probably 5 or 10 people who can win the race. So, you know, everybody's not going to win $150,000. But for the really big runners, the world-class runners, you know, that's a big payday, $150,000. So hopefully the marathon can attract a sponsor, a principal sponsor, that will be able to foot the bill for that.
We're talking to WBUR marathon reporter Alex Ashlak. You know, I remember when John Hancock was sold to Manulife in Toronto. That was during a stretch in the early aughts with lots of concern about loss of corporate headquarters here that would mean less money coming into our civic life. Are you worried about the BAA, Alex, being able to find another sponsor for the Boston Marathon?
You know, they do have a lot of other sponsors. Of course, smaller amounts of money, smaller deals they have. This might be an opportunity. I'm not a marketing expert, but this might be an opportunity for the BAA to look at a different type of company or, you know, some sort of social media platform or something like that. I think maybe they don't need one principal sponsor potentially anymore. Maybe it could be a combination of smaller groups, you know, able to put together the prize money that they need to attract those really elite runners every year.
All right, last question for you, Alex. We have been on a journey together from when we talked on air about whether there would be a Boston Marathon in the first COVID year to there wasn't, and then it was delayed again, and then a fall marathon. Next year, quote-unquote, normal marathon, April 2023. What are you most excited about?
Well, you know, the thing I want to see most of all is Eliud Kipchoge run a marathon here. He's the world's greatest marathoner by far. If he were to add a Boston Marathon victory to his resume, there would be no debate about who the best marathon runner ever is or was. He's running Berlin on September 25th. Certainly gives him enough time to come back and run a Boston in April. So I'd love to see him here.
Well, if he does, we'll talk to you about it.
We will.
That's Alex Ashlak, who has reported on the Boston Marathon for WBUR since 1998. Alex, thanks.
You're welcome.